I'm Julia Sherbakov, and this is Impact Journey. Conversations with hidden heroes making big societal change.
All of you say you want to be stakeholder driven. It's easy to talk. If you want to actually do it, here are some tools and processes to actually do it. Companies that have become B Corps have told me that my business is better. It's not that I'm socially and more environmentally responsible, but actually going through these processes has made my business better from a business standpoint.
Today, I am happy to welcome Chris Marquis. About his impact, Chris is the S.C. Johnson Professor of Sustainable Global Enterprise at Cornell University and is author of the new book, Better Business: How the B Corp Movement is Remaking Capitalism. About his journey, on this podcast, I've talked to academics analyzing big trends in society and to people in business at the forefront of big social change. Chris sits right at the intersection of these two worlds. He has dedicated his academic career to studying how business can do good. And this conversation in his book comes just at the right time. In this crisis, when we're asking, what does it mean to be a better business? Chris lays out how B Corps give us a model. As always, rate, review, and send any suggestions to impactjourneypodcast@gmail.com. And enjoy this conversation with Chris Marquis. I'd love to hear what brought you here. What got you to academia and to sustainable business specifically, but then within that, you also specialized in China. So I'd love to also hear, how do all those...
how do I weave all that together? So how did I get here? So I guess the first question is how I got to academia. So I have always sort of been interested in teaching and researching. I was in a PhD program actually originally out of my undergraduate in history, focused on Chinese history, which is my China thread. But one, it would have been impossible to find a job. And two, I realized that while I like reading history, doing it as a scholar is something totally different. I ended up getting a master's degree in history, then realizing that I should go to work to earn some money, which I did. I went in financial services for a while.
Yeah, how did you end up in financial services?
My hometown, Pittsburgh, actually, at the time, was somewhat of a large banking center. Having grown up there, and I knew a lot of people that worked at those institutions, and then ended up finding a job and ended up, yeah, spending 6 years at PNC, and then I moved to Bank One. And I learned a lot, and I realized along the way that actually studying business would be, from a career perspective, a little bit more viable, but I think also suited my intellectual interests a lot better. One, the research is frequently collaborative. I think also it has a much more applied dimension. The idea of taking knowledge and putting it to use, I think, is what I was really interested in. And that was one of the things that interested me in going back and getting a PhD. And luckily, I ended up for my first job being at Harvard Business School, which also has a deep commitment to social impact. They have this great social enterprise initiative. And I started teaching in the CSR classes. And how I got onto the B Corp movement, a student one day said in class, we should be studying these large companies like IBM and PNC. We should be studying companies with social missions embedded in them like B Corporations. And this was 2009, very early in the movement. And I had no idea. Here I'm the professor. I'm supposed
That's
to be-
That's a bit embarrassing.
Yeah, a bit embarrassing. I didn't know what the heck she was talking about. She mentioned Method Home Products, Seventh Generation, Trillium, King Arthur Flour. So I'm like, oh, that's really interesting. So I went back to my office and Googled around a little bit and learned about it. Then I contacted B-Lab, the organization that's started the whole B Corp movement, and basically said, I'd love to write an HBS case about you. That's how it started. And so that case study was published in 2010.
Was that first of its kind? Because the movement was born around 2007. And so... Right. It was still really nascent at that point.
Still nascent. I think there were 300 or less B Corps at the time. It was very, very early. And so I did this case study in 2010. I then did a whole second case study in 2015, also on B-Lab. And along the way did HBS case studies on six other B Corps, from small chocolate purveyors, Sweet Riot, to Warby Parker, Danone, the Danone North America, largest B Corp in the world, $6 billion company, did a great case study on the process of how large companies end up transitioning. So I've done a ton of work and research around B Corps. So it became a real passion.
That's so interesting. You've charted this path from financial services to academia looking at companies, but looking at the impact part of companies. And I'm curious what your own evolution at that point was, even initially, what got you from business to CSR? And then it sounds like your student really got you from CSR to B Corps.
Yeah, a couple things. My thinking on this has changed really dramatically. And my PhD actually is in sociology. And I think that probably some of my own ideology, but then also I'm sure based on the program that I went through, I really thought this was something that companies had a responsibility to give back, be part of the communities. Once I started teaching on it at HBS, I think my thinking really shifted a bit to how this could actually provide financial benefit to the companies too. The better you are in your social and environmental and governance performance, it's indicators that you're run for the long term, high degree of management quality. And I think that a lot of my thinking is much more on this link between social impact and business impact. And I wrote a lot of cases on this. One of them, for instance, that really sort of got me thinking, I did a case study on Bloomberg and how they ended up implementing into the Bloomberg terminal a bunch of ESG factors. And it turns out that actually investors were clamoring for this, hedge funds and institutions, decade before Larry Fink started talking about this. They're looking for anything to get an edge on other investors, new ways of proxying long-term impact. So I think for a long time, my thinking was there's a financial business case for it, but I've actually come back around to the responsibility angle. There's so much of companies, because of the shareholder primacy system, abusing the externalities, things like pollution or healthcare costs. If the company doesn't pay them, they end up getting shifted onto society in some ways. So much of what I'm doing and thinking about now is understanding how the system could be engineered in a way to make it much more stakeholder driven, to have companies account for their externalities and pay for them. Because the past 50 years, it's been shifting to just really focusing on shareholders, and we're all worse off. You see the environmental degradation, income inequality. I mean, it's just been disastrous for the world. And we need to bring things back to a balance between corporations and society, because they're just sort of quickly going to go off a cliff.
I remember for myself, coming from very traditional corporate backgrounds, thinking that there was this decision I had to make. Either I worked in for-profit and made money, but was evil, or I worked in nonprofit and did something good for the world. And the way I understood the B Corp concept was, oh, wow, there actually is something in the middle. It's not an either or. And so that for me was a bit of an eye opener of, you can actually have a for-profit business in the current capitalist model that actually serves society. And so I'm curious, how do you come across that trade-off? You teach at a business school. How have you seen that thinking evolve?
It's a very interesting point, because my thinking has also evolved on this. Actually, B-Lab and their change strategy, how it's evolved, has really shaped my thinking, and it really shaped the framing of the book. So as you described it, I think for a long time, people thought of these two areas. You could either be business and for-profit, or you could be a nonprofit. And there has been this rise of this hybridization of these two ideas. And I think that that was originally B-Lab's idea. The framing, though, now, there's a lot of B Corps. So there's about 3,500 B Corps around the world, which is pretty rapid growth. But still, 3,500 is pretty small. And I frame the book and the theory of change that I'm trying to advocate is that using the tools that B-Lab and B Corps developed, sort of all companies can be like B Corp. There's the B Impact Assessment. Over 100,000 companies actually use that to measure what matters. And a number of private equity and venture capital investors actually use it to assess their companies. So this is getting bigger when you think about actually the tools, the governance part. So the benefit corporation law in the United States, 36 states, well over 10,000 benefit corporations. As you know, a number of other countries, Italy, which was the first, Colombia, Ecuador, also the Canadian province of British Columbia, France most recently, are also introducing other social benefit type of legal models. So these different tools and processes, be they impact assessment, be they governance structures, can have huge impact on our entire world and economy. And I think as all these elite actors like the Business Roundtable, the World Economic Forum, are all saying the company should be more stakeholder driven. In some ways, these B Corp models provide really the toolkit and actually to do that. How the book is now pitched is that all of you say you want to be stakeholder driven, it's easy to talk. If you want to actually do it, here are some tools and processes to actually do it.
Yeah, I'm so glad you say that. For people who might not be as familiar with B Corps, the way I got to understand it, those two elements of it, so the benefit corporation legal structure and then the B Corp measurement, are two separate things that are solving two different problems. The legal structure is, okay, well, legally, normally when you start a company, you have a legal obligation to make the most profit and return that to your shareholders. And this gives you the freedom to have a public benefit. So that's the legal part. And then on the other side, the measurement, it's all this other problem of how do you tell the difference from who's talking the talk and who's walking the walk? How do you measure the whole of a company? What attracted me to the whole B Corp model is everyone can do a really nice CSR initiative. Not everyone can get 80 on the B Corp assessment to get certified right. A B Corp. That is really, really hard. Tough. And so I'm curious, as you've studied the B Corps, the ability to measure the impact of a company that's a number, but it's not the number of sales and profit. From an academic point of view, how have you seen that shifting mentality in the corporate world?
Yeah, that's been a huge shift as well. This is something that continues to be a real challenge, not just business, but even nonprofits actually have this difficulty of how do you measure social impact? Profit is relatively easy. The B Lab folks, what they've done is by actually just focusing on companies' social impact, they're able by having special flavors for different sectors and industries and geographies and size, get to what is a really good assessment given the size of a company in a certain industry. I think also something that's really important with impact measurement is measuring outcomes, not just processes. In the broader scheme of things, people have also been highlighting this. You know, Larry Fink has, over the past 3 years, written these annual letters about companies being more purpose-driven. But the whole second half of that letter is actually about accountability. That's an indication that investors are really taking this very seriously.
And I love that you mention outcomes versus process, because the B Corp assessment and often any sort of impact metrics will have a bit of both. They'll say, do you have an equal treatment policy? That's more process. But then it says, okay, but what percent of your leadership are women or people of color? My favorite question on the B Impact assessment is, what's the ratio of the highest paid person in the company to the lowest paid person in the company? You could say you believe in equality all you want, but that number really tells the story.
Right.
Not only does it give you a way to measure the whole impact of the company, but now there's a level of visibility and transparency.
Exactly. I've studied larger companies doing their CSR reports as well. These are companies that are not B Corps, probably never be B Corps. But one of the things I've heard many times is that actually putting a number out there, first of all, opens up to scrutiny, which is probably good. But second of all, it has a natural improvement logic built into it. So if you put out X number of carbon emissions 1 year, you don't want to have X plus one or X plus 10. You want to have X minus one or X minus 10 in the next year.
Yeah. And now let's talk about even more to the point of the subject of your book, which is how the B Corp movement is really going more mainstream. Something I've heard since working with the B Corp movement is, okay, that's great. Patagonia can do that. This small company over here that's family owned, sure, they can do that. But I work in this big business. There's just no way it's possible over here. So I'm curious, what's the change that you've seen that's now making this go more mainstream?
Yeah, I think a couple very important elements of this. So one is that there's more and more examples of larger companies doing it. So showing it's possible. Danone is the great example of this, or Unilever, Natura, Brazilian cosmetics maker, has bought The Body Shop, but then also recently Avon in the US. So all of these companies show that actually you can be a large company and start with actually having these different units. I think another important aspect of this is that public markets are increasingly coming around to this. You know, it's amazing to think that the idea of impact investing, the first coining of that term was just in 2007, to think about how far we've come since then. So not only are there tons of impact investors that have invested in B Corps, but virtually every mainstream private equity venture capital company from Kleiner Perkins to Google Ventures to Goldman Sachs' venture arm to New Enterprise Associates, you name it, they own a B Corp in their portfolio. Just last month in July, two B Corps went public in the US. Lemonade, a online insurance company, went public on the New York Stock Exchange. And then Vital Farms, their core product is sustainably produced eggs. And these two companies went public, smashing successes. So you have the big companies that are adopting it. You have investors that are really coming around. And then also, I think the thing that we really need to focus on is consumers. If you read consumer surveys, particularly millennials, you hear a lot that people care about this. They want to buy products as a result of this. But I don't think yet the people are actually doing it. It's just so convenient. All your information is typed in to Amazon. And I'm guilty of it myself. Conscious consumerism is what really needs to drive this going forward. One aspect of this that I think is real promising is, so some of these larger B Corps like Danone are putting the B Corp logo on their products. One reason I think why consumers may not be as conscious of the consumer as they can be, because it's hard to tell what companies are authentically being good for the world. And I think as the knowledge of the B logo rises, that will really be helpful.
What you're describing is a lot of these pieces starting to connect. It's no longer just one do-gooder company on their own over here. Now it's not even a group of companies, but it's a lot of those systemic factors. So the way investors are behaving and who they're choosing to invest in or not invest in. And on the other side, you've got the rest of us common people. We get to choose who we buy from and also choose who we work with. That's another part, is where do we want to put in all our waking hours of the day now that we're all working from home? And I'm curious how you see the next evolution of this systemically. What do you think maybe needs to happen to then transform this to really be commonplace the way we do business?
So I think that large companies, we need to see much more growth there. B Lab, I think, very smartly created a new program, which I describe a little bit in the SSIR article that I recently published, called B Movement Builders, where they're designing pathways for larger companies to actually get on board the movement in an incremental way. It is such a daunting challenge to think about doing this for the whole company when you're a large company. And I think having different on-ramps is useful. So as large companies, investors, I think consumers, it's something we need to always be keeping attention to. I know just researching the book, I've become a much more conscious consumer. I really will immediately first search for B corporations for what I buy. Being at home with the pandemic, I got much more in shape and I lost a bunch of weight, not traveling and not eating. I had to buy a bunch of new clothes and everything was B Corps actually. So,
Done.
One of the big areas that I really need to think about, and I think consumers should, is financial services. Where our money sleeps at night in some ways is a huge impact that we can have. And as it is, my money is not yet with a socially responsible fund.
I'm also curious because I have a lot of people I talk to who are just very skeptical. Yeah, that all sounds great, but then what does it really change? How does that make my life any better at the end of the day? Given that you've written so many case studies and you've talked to so many companies, what do you notice that is different than a normal company?
It's really interesting. It's why I titled the book Better Business, because even venture capital companies that have become B Corps have told me that my business is better because of doing this. And it's not that I'm maybe socially responsible and more environmentally responsible, but actually going through these processes has made my business better from a business standpoint. To go back to the sort of economic motivation around it, it's actually better for your business to be run this way. And it's a much more sustainable, long-term oriented, just thinking about some of the specific economic impacts. The employee retention at these companies is through the roof. And comparing to industry peers, many times better. Recently, a B Corp leader, she was telling me that one benefit is that I don't have to recruit ever, because one, people stay. So, I don't have to replace people. But two, so many people want to work for B Corps that there's a huge line of people outside the door of our company just wanting to come in. So that's one thing. I think that being part of this network where companies share best practices, work together, and everyone wants to help each other and become better as an overall community.
Yeah, and I think it also speaks to something bigger that's happening, which is this sense of collective responsibility, sense of we're in this together. It's not just me and my company, but I think we're really feeling it through the COVID crisis, through the economic crisis, through the inequality crisis. There's no way I can solve this on my own. And I think the B Corp movement create this sense of we are in it all together and let's help each other. If someone else is doing this thing really well over here, let me learn from them and apply it.
Yeah. My favorite example of that is Allbirds. They ended up creating a new technology for their sole, the sole of a shoe being probably the most environmentally damaging part of the shoe. And they created new sole technology based out of sugarcane. And they opened it up to the world and said, if everyone uses this, the world is better. So it's a great example of that.
I love that example. The other reason I love that is when Amazon did a knockoff of the Allbirds shoe. Did you see this? It was made with very non-environmentally responsible materials. Allbirds said, wait a second, here's the recipe for how you make it. Like, if you're going to copy us, at least do it right.
Right. Yeah.
Well, thank you for writing this book, first of all, and for doing all that work on over the last decade or so, sharing it with more and more people. So that's why I'm really glad to have you on here.
It's great. I'm so glad to be on your podcast.
A big thanks to Chris. You can find his book, his most recent article in the Stanford Social Innovation Review, his recent writings on business and society on Forbes and Medium in the links in the show notes. This is Impact Journey. See you next time.